Now, we're turning to Nehemiah, and we're in chapter 4 tonight, 5 and 6. Chapter 4 of Nehemiah. But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And he spake before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, "What do these feeble Jews? Will they fortify themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they make an end in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish which are burned?" Now Tobiah the Ammonite was by him, and he said, "Even that which they build, if a fox go up, he shall even break down their stone wall. Hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn the reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity, and cover not their iniquity, nor let their sin be blotted out from before thee, for they have provoked thee to anger before the builders." So built we the wall, and the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then were they very wroth, and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God. Verse 14, "And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, Be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses." It came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, every one unto his. Now chapter 5. "And there was a great cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren, the Jews. For there were that said, We, our sons and our daughters are many. Therefore we take up corn for them, that we may eat and live. Some also there were that said, We have mortgaged our lands, vineyards, and houses, that we might buy corn because of the dearth. There were also that said, We have borrowed money for the king's tribute, and that upon our lands and vineyards. Yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, our children as their children, and lo, we bring into bondage our sons and our daughters to be servants, and some of our daughters are brought unto bondage already. Neither is it in our power to redeem them, for other men have our lands and vineyards. And I was very angry when I heard their cry and these words. Then I consulted with myself, and I rebuked the nobles and the rulers, and said unto them, Ye exact usury every one of his brother. And I set a great assembly against them. And I said unto them, We after our ability have redeemed our brethren the Jews, which were sold unto the heathen. And will ye even sell your brethren, or shall they be sold unto us? Then held they their peace, and found nothing to answer. Now chapter 6. Now it came to pass, when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of our enemies heard that I builded the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates, that Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, Come, let us meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. And I sent messengers unto them, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease, whilst I leave it and come down to you? Yet they sent unto me four times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. Then Sanballat served unto me in like manner the fifth time with an open letter in his hand, wherein it was written, it is reported among the heathen, and Gashmu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, and that thou mayest be their king according to these words. Verse 8, then I send unto him, saying, there are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine own heart. For they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. Afterward I came unto the house of Shemaiah, the son of Delilah, and the son of Mehetabel, who was shut up. And he said, let us meet together in the house of God within the temple, and let us shut the doors of the temple, for they will come to slay thee, yea, in the night will they come to slay thee. And I said, should such a man as I flee? And who is there that, being as I am, would go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. And lo, I perceived that God had not sent him, but that he pronounced this prophecy against me, for Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. Therefore he hired him that I should be afraid and do so in sin, that they might have matter for an evil report, that they might reproach me. My God, think thou upon Tobiah and Sanballat according to these their works, and on the prophetess Noadiah, and the rest of the prophets that would have put me in fear. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Elul in 52 days. Now we trust the Lord will add his blessing to this reading of his word. Now we have been concerned with the opening part of Nehemiah, the first three chapters, and we have seen Nehemiah laying the foundations, didn't we, in that chapter of report in chapter 1. And then last night in chapter 2 we saw him viewing the fragments, that great chapter of review. And then in chapter 3 we saw him building, repairing the fortress, and that of course is the chapter of repair. Now there's much more could be enlarged upon in these chapters, as you know, but we trust we're just touching the vital issues and enabling you as beloved brethren and sisters in Christ to read and to enrich your mind through the reading of this great book. And grasping, I do trust, the nature of the work of God at this time and how appropriate it is even for the day in which we live, as we trust we will learn as the meetings progress. Now, we have come into three important chapters almost in the middle of this great book. And right away we're going to have to understand their material, and my way of doing it is just to give you, first of all, a title for each chapter. I think in chapter 4 we would call it the chapter of restlessness. Restlessness. The enemy is becoming more and more active, more and more enraged. And indeed, he's going to develop a warlike stance, and he's going to attack the work and the workers. So it is distinctly a chapter of restlessness. And what we could say is this, that the enemy is attacking the work of God. I would say very reverently that there never has been a work of God in any day, at any time, but it has been the object of the assault of the evil one. Right from the moment God put Adam and Eve in the garden, that which was planted and placed by God, the devil moved in and he attacked the work of God, and we know the result in our very souls at this moment of time. And right down through the ages, we have learned surely that no work of God passes without the attack and the attention of Satan. Therefore, beloved, we should be vigilant. Very vigilant. We should be very, very diligent as well. so that if any such thing could occur within the framework of this assembly, or the assemblies represented, we have the spiritual ability to discern. We have the sensitivity to detect the presence and the purpose of the evil one, because he would want to overthrow the testimony as it is in this very place. So we learn in chapter 4, the enemy attacks the work of God. Now we come to chapter 5 shortly, and we're going to have to look at it as a chapter of rebuke, because the enemy assaults the people of God. The people of God. And we're going to have to do a little bit of work when we come to that to pick up the thread that I haven't mentioned heretofore in the ministry, because the devil not only worked from without, but the devil worked from within. And you remember the wisdom of Paul in Acts 20? He said, after my departure, and he told those elders plainly, there would be a work that would arise from without, and there would be a work that would arise from within. And this could be very, very injurious to the testimony in Ephesus. The wisdom of Paul is just exactly what is the work here of this tremendous passage. Now, when we come to chapter 6, I'm going to call it the chapter of the refuge, because the enemy that attacks the work of God, and the enemy that attacks the people of God, is the same enemy that assails the servant of God. Now that's the message to me of chapter 6. So chapter 4 is the enemy attacking the work of God. In chapter 5 is the enemy attacking the people of God. And in chapter 6, the enemy assailing the servant of God. Now of course, in each of these chapters, what we're looking at is the enemy and his attack, his assault, and as he assails the servant. Now, as we come to these three chapters, let us pick up a little thread that has been weaving its way through these chapters. That's why I've told you to read it carefully every day and make sure you focus on those words that occur, and then those words that recur, and build up your own approach to the book. Now, when we open our Bible here at chapter 4, we read this, but it came to pass that when Sanballat heard. Now, that's a great word in Nehemiah. A great word. You remember that in chapter 1 and verse 4, when it was first used, and it's used of Nehemiah having heard. Heard what? The report his brother and his friends brought to him concerning the Jews and concerning Jerusalem. When he heard it, it broke him and bowed him in the presence of God. And the next time it is used in our book is in that opening prayer of Nehemiah. Hear, O our God. He wants God to hear. His ears have heard. Now he wants the ear of God to hear the plain prayer and plea he puts before his God. A simple word, you know. But it's wonderful to see how it develops. Now, we noticed last night the use of it. Didn't you notice it? Maybe you missed it. Chapter 2, verse 10. Sanballat and Tobiah, what happened? When they heard. The enemy hears. Nehemiah heard. And then God heard. And then we read the enemy heard. And that's simple, isn't it? See, you want to watch these simple words. They form a tremendous message in themselves. Sanballat heard. Chapter 2, verse 19 is the same. Again, the enemy hears. There is further information being spread. There is more activity than they can bear. And when they heard it, then another attitude developed, as we saw last night. First of all, it was one of complaint. And then we saw that it became one of contempt. Contempt. And so you see the word is developing. Now we have it in chapter 4, verse 1. What is it? But it came to pass that when Sanballat heard that we builded the wall, he was wroth and took great indignation and mocked the Jews. And where was he? He was having a military parade in Samaria with a Samaritan army. His adjutant beside him, Tobiah, was there on the dais, and they were parading, and they probably were inspecting the army that they were gathering from afar to rain vengeance on the people of God. There wasn't a soul in that audience had even a tinge of sympathy for the people we're thinking about tonight, and the world never has when it comes to the work of God and the Word of God, as you know, brethren. And here is Sanballat, and he took great wrath and indignation and mocked the Jews. And what is happening now? It started with complaint. It went on to contempt. Now it's cynicism. Listen to what he says. What do these feeble Jews? We note these questions now. What's he doing? He attacks their person. Feeble Jews. Absolutely stripped of strength. Incapable. Utterly incapable of ever accomplishing their great enterprise. That's what Sanballat thought. And he demeans the people of God. What do these feeble Jews? Well, there's no doubt about it. They were feeble. There's no question about it. And I don't think Nehemiah felt anything else in his soul. But listen, brethren. Nehemiah had a source of strength that he could tap. And that source of strength was his God. So Sanballat knew nothing of that. Nor did Tobiah. And the mass of army that stood before him. What does he say next? He says, will they fortify themselves? He attacks their person. Now he attacks their hope. Isn't that just exactly what they were hoping to do? Isn't that just exactly what they were wanting to do? They were wanting to raise the fortifications. They were wanting to give the city some dignity. They were wanting to give the city some security. Will they fortify themselves? I want to tell you, sir, and good sirs, today, says Sanballat, we'll blast their hope. Mind you, brethren, you don't mistake it, the devil's on our track. He knows what our hopes are. He knows what our desires are. What to do? To fortify the testimony of God until the Savior comes. Is that not what we're after? To hold the truth of God inviolate until the Savior appears. The devil mocks us tonight. We're insignificant, aren't we? We're only a small company compared to the masses outside. Will they fortify themselves? Yes. They will under the hand of God. But the devil's raging. And there's Sanballat imposed upon the audience that he's with in Samaria. And it sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds great. What else does he say? Will they sacrifice? Ah, that was just their very confidence. They believed that once they would get this together, they'd be able to put the sacrifice on the altar for God. They weren't sympathetic to this. He attacks their person, he attacks their hope, and he attacks their confidence. And then he said, will they make an end in a day? How long is it going to take them? Look at how weak they are. Look at how insufficient they are. Will they finish it in a day? He's trying to dampen their enthusiasm. You know, brother, I hope that you don't succumb to the intrusion of the evil one in your spiritual enthusiasm for God. I'm telling you that. I feel that we need this because when we look around and when we see the testimony in different parts and places from time to time, I want to tell you, friend, we're bowed in utter agony before God. Many and many we knew and loved in a day that is past are no longer active. Their enthusiasm has drained. Their enthusiasm has disappeared. Where's yours tonight? Man, the devil can attack your person. The devil can attack your hope. The devil can attack your confidence. And he's here at their enthusiasm. And then he said, listen to this. Will they revive the stones out of the heap of rubbish which are burned? That was a problem. That was a problem. Think of the rubbish. Think of what they had to remove before they put one stone in place and another. Think of the labor and toil and sweat they had to endure to do it. And here he's attacking their very problem. What's he doing? He's multiplying it. They knew it was a problem. There was much rubbish. We'll read that if we know anything about the point in verse 10. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. Oh, the enemy knows where to put his finger, friend. And often I know, they never say it when I'm about, but I have heard it carried to me. People say this and they say that. And you know, if only they would stop a minute, they're contributing to the work of a Sanballat. Watch it. Watch what you say. Watch what you say. Don't be the tool in the hand of the devil to weaken the testimony, my dear brother. My dear sister. Here is the devil. Here is the evil one. Here is the master of the darkness of hell, spewing out truth and ballot, hatred, indignation against the people of God. Right and straightforward cynicism. Wouldn't touch it. Wouldn't depend on it. Wouldn't put a thing to it, he says, because listen, it's going to come to naught. What's the next thing? Tobiah was standing beside him and he said, you're right, sir. Let me just add another point. You see, if they even get this wall built, if a fox went up on it, a fox, and you know how lightly a fox would tread, he said, he'll break down their stone wall. He's challenging their efficiency. Tell you the devil so. And I want you to understand that the saints of God, the people of God in that day, were just the same as you and as me. And we are just the same tonight as they. And the devil can make the same attack through you, through me, through whomever so whom he will. Why? Because he's intent in bringing the work to nothing. To naught. Well, it's lovely to hear this. Hear, O our God. Not good. You got the word again? Verse number four, hear, O our God. And we have heard what this man has said. And Lord, what are they saying? I have heard what he said. But Lord, hear, O our God, for we are despised, and turn the reproach upon their head. And here are the saints of God interceding and pleading that God would hear them. And as you know, there is divine consolation. Because in chapter 4, verse 6, we're getting a half-time report. A half-time report. What is it? It says, so built we the wall, and the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. Isn't that a wonderful little verse? In spite of the attack of the enemy, in spite of all the insinuations of this evil man and his compatriots, the work was going on, and they had a mind to build, and now they've reached a halfway point. They've got half of it built. I take that to be divine consolation. Here's a progress report. Brethren, I trust as you visualize the assembly here, you can give a progress report. That in spite of the surrounding pressure, in spite of the darkening day, in spite of the evil of the evil one and evil men all around us, thank God the work is going on. That's what we want. And I trust you're putting all that you have into it for the glory of God and the honor of Christ and the salvation of souls and the enrichment of His people. And it's lovely just to have a report. I'm sure you have report meetings. And announce to the assembly the progress. And thank God for it. But it came to pass, verse 7, that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites and the Ashdodites heard, there we are at it again. See our little word? Great word this. Here it is again. Now listen, get your map out. Get it out now if you will, at the back of your Bible, and make sure you understand where this is. You get the Samaritans, they've been mentioned in the earlier verses of the chapter, and they were in the north. And the Arabians, they were in the south. And the Ammonites, they were in the east. And the Ashdodites were on the west. Here was the people of God in circle. Circle. The enemy's pressing in. And what happens? They heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped. Then were they very wrong. And listen, and they conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem. Now we're mounting the steps, aren't we? First of all, what was it? Complaint. And then it was contempt. Then it was cynicism. Now it's conflict. Conflict. Before it was just word. Now it's action. Before it was just what they said. But now it's what they're going to do. It's war. War. And they conspired, all of them, together. Now, I like the word together. And if you're coming down to Melbourne, don't think you will. But if you are and you hear the ministry on Ezra, you'll know that that's a key word in that book. But what I want to point out is this. You see that word there in verse 6. So the wall was joined together. That's the same word as the word in verse number 8. And they conspired all of them together. Same word. Just as the people of God had built rebuilt those walls that were broken down, that were separate one from the other, and joined them together. So the enemy, they joined together. Same word. That word conspired is exactly the same word as the word joined. You see, beloved, the devil is on the move. The devil knows how to draw upon the resources he possesses to do exactly a united effort. Why are we broken up? I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm not in any way informed. I just want to ask you, is there disunity in this meeting? Is there disunity in the meeting you're in fellowship with? Because mind you, there's plenty of unity outside as far as the devil's concerned. Plenty. You got it? That's what I learned here. Oh, I'm making it clear. So what is this? And says the word, verse 9, nevertheless we made our prayer unto God. Wonderful. Every time, I hope you noticed it now. And get it down. Don't say you know it. And if I ask you, you'll not be able to tell me. You get it down that each time the enemy has appeared, God is mentioned. Is that the way to handle it? Go to God. Now listen, brethren, I hope we do. Usually we lift the phone and go to our brethren. What do you think? And likely we never spend 5 minutes asking God what he thinks. But if I've read this book aright, I can see that Nehemiah is putting down before me a tremendous path. A tremendous principle. Hope you follow it. Well, we're just going to mix a little bit in a moment, and we're going to go in now into chapter, right down into chapter 5. We'll go back in a moment to that. Chapter 5, the enemy assaults the people of God, and as we said, here is a very sad chapter, and it's one of rebuke. We've been talking about the enemy outside there. We've been talking about the enemy and his activity against, outside, and in relation to the building, and the work. But I want to tell you this, brethren, and I think you know this very well. The devil has been inside before we come to this chapter. You got that? That's my way of putting it. He's been inside before we come to this chapter. Now, if you go back to where we were last night, and if you cast your eye at chapter 3 and verse 5, you may be wondered why I didn't mention it. I know what I'm doing in that sense. I want to mention it now. The nobles belonging to the Koites did not put their necks to the work. See where the devil was beginning? Right in the very inside. Right in the very inside. In that amazing chapter where so many great men and so many simple men and so many women too are mentioned. Hope you've got all the names. I know they're difficult for an Irishman to pronounce, but that's not the point. Hope you've got them all down. I hope you're able to tell me how many names are in the book, in the chapter. We're shaking hands tonight to expect a question. Now, the point is this. The devil was there. Here were men who were in responsibility. Here were men that held a place of dignity, and they put not next to the word. I mean, think of it. I was just thinking today that if Amos had been alive, he'd been ashamed of them. For he was a Tekoite. What effect had that on the ordinary people? Well, thank God it had no effect. Why? The Tekoites repaired another spot. They'll get credit. And I believe their day is coming when they'll get more credit. That even though those men of dignity and responsibility didn't lend a helping hand, they got above it. And they did twice as much for the glory of God. My dear brethren, can you get that? Are you folding your arms and say, well, I don't go because brother so-and-so doesn't go. And I don't pray because brother so-and-so doesn't pray. And I don't do this because... And listen, friend, if that's dictating your course, the sooner you get down to this book, the better. But the devil was in deliberate avoidance of the word. Now, back to chapter 4, verse 10. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so they were not able to build the wall. And our adversary said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come in the midst of them and slay them and cause the work to cease. And poor Judah, he's just despairing of weariness. The hand cart's too heavy, mister. I'm just a bit tired carrying these load of stones and this bundle of rubbish. Isn't that true? Despairing weariness. The devil's inside. Here are men that ought to have been the lead. Men of Judah. Judah always takes first place, doesn't he? In that tribal order. But the men of Judah are complaining. The burden's heavy. The work's difficult. We're in danger of our lives. Mind you, Nehemiah has enough to listen to without these men coming on the score. But there it is. Verse 12, depressive fear. And it came to pass that when the Jews which dwelt by them came, they said unto us 10 times, from all places whence ye shall return unto us, they will be upon you. Therefore set I in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. Not only are they weakening, but they're worrying. Not only are they tired, but they're trembling. The devil has got in. Now they're despairing of life. And look at the added responsibility upon the servant here. You see how it's building up? But when we come to chapter 5, it's disrespectful behavior. Disrespectful behavior. Here are poor people already. And they're put under a burden by other brethren. They're making money out of the situation. Taking exception to the financial burden upon the people. There's not enough food. They're trying to get their land back. They're trying to develop it in order to be able to pay what is demanded of them. And they find they're under mortgage to their brethren. See how the devil has got in? I haven't time to deal with this, brethren. But you see how he's developing it, can't you? Disrespectful behavior shouldn't have been amongst the brethren. Isn't that the very point that Nehemiah is making in this mighty chapter? Well, because the devil is attacking of the flesh. Well, that didn't come from God, and you know that. I don't need to say that to you. What I'm trying to point out is this. I hope you can see the tremendous inside activity of the devil. He's working outside. Is that not enough? No. He must work inside. He might not be able to secure his objective through the outside, but oh, if he could do it through the inside, wouldn't that be good? And listen, once you see blessing, and once you see gospel, and once you see souls being saved, don't stand up and be proud. Get down on your knees and pray that God will preserve the testimony, because the devil will get in. I hope and trust we're not oblivious, as Paul would say, to his devices. 2 Corinthians would come in tremendously in these chapters, where the apostle mentions the devil, I think, more times in that epistle than any other epistle he ever wrote. He gives them titles that you only find in that second epistle. And he gives them terms that are only applied there and used there, as you know. And so it compares favorably in that tremendous sense with these chapters. Here's the devil at work. And this man can say, now listen, brother, I've been a governor here for a long time. I just want to tell you something you wouldn't know. I haven't taken the wages of the governor. And I spread a table every day for my brethren at my own personal need, at my own personal hand. And listen, brother, you have to be morally above the situation to deal with it. And Nehemiah was. I don't know how those men felt when that dear man told them those things. You'll have to read the whole of the chapter. It's a tremendous chapter. It's a chapter of rebuke. He told them plainly, I thought that you understood you were never, according to the law of God, to bring your brother into usury. I thought that you lived according to the principles you profess to hold. They must have been ashamed. And he says, verse 19, remember me, my God. Think upon me, my God, for good. All that I have done for this people. Not good. Now chapter 6. He attacks the work of God. He assaults the people of God. But now we see him assailing the servant of God. Now it came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of our enemies heard. Now, get the word again. Here it is again. You see? You see how the enemy has got ears? And you see how many things he has heard? And you see what he's able to drink in? And each time the hearing is added, the intensity of the opposition increases. Now the servant's being attacked. For they know, if they could fire a dart at this man's heart, he'd fall. And if he fell, that's it. The devil knows that. The devil knows it, friend. And you be careful. You be careful. And I'm warning you, won't you? You'll accept the warning. Again, I'm quoting from Corinthians. Let us be not ignorant of his devices. For here this man wasn't. For had he been, the work would have never, never come to the conclusion that verse 15 brings it to in this chapter. Now, what's happening? Well, what's happening is this. that Sambalat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, Come, let us meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono. You see how the devil has so many strings to his bow, as we say. In the previous passage, it was conflict. Open warfare. Now he's wanting a conference. What do you think of it? A conference. Let's meet together in one of the villages in the plain of Ono. Now, Ono is mentioned twice in your book. And if you look at it, you'll find the cunning nature of this as to why he wanted him down there. That was the Valley of the Craftsmen. And if you get him down there, among other things, they could show him a thing or two. It might dissuade him about the way he's going about it. And it might just bring the whole thing to a standstill by the time that he would be able to imitate what they would do down there. And you see the subtlety of it. You see, brethren, I want you to understand that what they're doing here, they're assailing this man on the level of his consecration. The level of his consecration. They know, and in fact it is clear in this passage, for this man says it. If they could get Nehemiah to leave the work, and they get the hold of him down there, the work would cease. For he would lose command. And he would lose consecration. For did he not consecrate himself to God in that opening chapter to do for God what God had put in his heart? Oh, brethren, let us rise to the tremendous responsibility of the work of God. Let us rise to the tremendous demand of the things of God upon us. I know the devil is subtle, because here's the cunningness of the enemy. From conflict to conference. Just let us meet. And we'll sit down and we'll discuss and we'll debate and we'll arrive at a settlement and the thing will be finished. Forever. Now that's difficult. I tell you that's difficult. And for this man to find himself in a situation that he objected to all his day here. For him to find himself in such a conflict and in such a conference would deprive him of all the conviction, consecration. He ever had. Now, I want to speak very plainly, brethren. I want you to be understanding this, that if you compromise with truth, your voice is shut. Your mouth is closed. That's all they wanted. People say, well, I have liberty to do this and I have liberty to do that. Where'd you get that from? Your liberty is within the compass of the will and word of God. You remember that? And you remember, if you go to places that involve the situations and the instruments and all the rest of the things that are now in vogue, you compromise your brethren. and if young saints follow you, how are you going to tell them to stop? You face it. Get the subtlety of the devil. Get the cunningness of the evil one. You make sure you don't respond to their subtlety, the vice of the village. That's how I'm putting it. Do you think was the enemy beaten? No. They said, well, we can't get him on that one. But I tell you what we'll do. We'll have a go at his character. He's strong in consecration. But how would it go if we attacked his character? And you see, here is another point, isn't it? Because it's the level of character. And they're asking how. Got a letter. And Nehemiah, do you know the contents of this letter? No. Well, it says that you just haven't done things the way you ought to have done them. And we have got something on you. We've got a report. I've called it, first of all, the vice of the village. But now I'm going to call it the lie of the letter. For what happened? Then I send unto them, saying, there are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou out of thine own heart feignest them. For they all made us afraid, saying, their hands shall be weakened from the work that had been not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen thou my hands. Is that good? I hope, brethren, you're aware of the subtlety of the evil one. He's attacking this man's consecration. He wouldn't come down. He says, and he calls it a great work. One of the many usages of that lovely word, great. It's a great work. I can't come down because it's of God. Now he says, Lord, you've heard what they're imposing. You've heard what they're inferring. You've heard what they have indicted. But Lord, thou knowest. And he says, O God, strengthen thou my hand. The devil finished? He's not finished yet. After all, he has, as we would say, reverently, under the circumstances, he had plenty of things up his sleeve, friend. In the second point there, they are condemning him. In that second attack there, they are charging him with dishonesty. They're impeaching his character. And the next time they speak, they wipe the slate clear. And they said, now listen, Nehemiah, do you know the conclusion we have come to? You're too good to die. And we want to tell you that they're after your life, you know. And we would suggest that in order for you as a good man that we know you are, and you're really too good to be slain, why not let us meet together in the house of God, within the temple, and let us shut the doors of the temple, for they will come to slay thee, yea, in the night will they come to slay thee. And you know, sometimes you go into a house and there's a four-footed animal there and you don't know what to do with it. You just give it a wee stroke and up goes the tail. Begins to purr. If you rub it the wrong way, you'll get a change, won't you? But boy, if you rub it the right way, the old cat will put up its tail. Enjoy a wee bit of it. That's what we're trying to do with Nehemiah. Obsequiousness. Give him a good smooth rub. Let him feel that he is something now. And if we could just get him into that temple. The finish, why? That's no place for him to hide. Not a priest. Not a priest. But in the urgency of the moment, in the crisis of the moment, he might just fall for it. But brethren, they attack him on the level of his consecration. And they attack him on the level of his character. And they attack him on the level of his conviction. This man of God stands firm. The vice of the village, the lie of the letter, the ruse of the refuge. Thank God, the servant of God, this man of God, had power to overcome and prove the power of God to bring him through, that he might accomplish, as is said in verse 15. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month. Hello. In 50 and 2 days. Lord bless his word.